When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the New Books in Music, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Alex Kuchma, the host of the channel, and today we'll be talking to Roy Christopher about his new book, Boogie Down Predictions, Hip-Hop, Time, and Afrofuturism. Roy Christopher, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And it's a pleasure. I've had a blast being able to go through what I have been able to go through of the text. And yeah, man, I'm excited to be able to go through this here. It should be a good one. So I was wondering if we could begin the interview just by you telling us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up getting acquainted with kind of hip hop in general, and a little bit about yourself.
I guess all of this goes back to making zines in my teens, which came out of skateboarding and BMX culture. I've moved around growing up, moved around every 2 years, but for the most part, I've been based. My parents are still here, and I was in high school in Southeast Alabama. And the skateboarders and the BMXers were all kind of outcasts because it's all like SEC football and big trucks and everything in Alabama. So we would, organize our own little things. If we had anything, we had to do it ourselves. And so I first started making zines because I saw them in one of the BMX magazines, and there were people who had skateboard, people would get skateboard zines in the mail. And I have an artist mother. So I originally thought that I was going to be an artist. And the first thing that drew me to zine making was just the graphic design of like balancing tonered like black and white photos on the page and like doing the layouts. But quickly realized that I was going to have to do the writing as well, because no one else is going to write about the, the Haro team coming to town, or the goofy skateboard contest we had on an abandoned building slab, or review the new Oingo Boingo record or whatever. So it fell to me to do the writing as well. And so that is the part that actually took off. I was an art major for the first 3 years of undergrad, realized I wanted to do more than that or something else other than that. No diss to art majors. And I was writing for zines and whatever. I moved to Seattle after graduation and started writing for magazines. I spent the first part of the 90s working at record stores and the last part of the 90s working at music magazines and skateboard magazines. And so it all kind of comes out of that, because right at the end of the 90s, I went back to grad school because I wanted to do something more than what I was doing at the time. And so my dissertation, this is many years later, I'm skipping because I had three different attempts at grad school and had years in between the two and lots of time passing. But
sure.
My dissertation for my PhD was on rap lyrics. So the music stuff never really went away. And so when I started putting together these book ideas, it kind of combines the, stuff I learned in grad school about methodology and, developing theories and all those different kinds of angles, but also just the love of the music was in there as well. And there's not so much skateboarding and BMX in my books, except for the one we'll talk about later, the one that I just finished up. but the music is definitely in there, and I do still skateboard and ride bikes. So it's all still the same kind of thing that I was doing as a zine maker, as a teenager.
How did you come to this project? Like, what made you interested in the idea of like hip hop and Afrofuturism and time and that kind of idea?
Well, one of the previous books I wrote, Dead Precedents, How Hip Hop Defines the Future, the core argument of that book is that hip hop culture is the blueprint for the 21st century culture. So I was trying to look at the way that all of these different cultural practices within hip hop culture have kind of defined and helped inform the cultural practices of the 21st century. And so in order to make that argument, I ended up going back into these kind of parallels between cyberpunk literature and the development of hip hop culture. And so those two kind of happened and evolved and came into the mass mind around the same time. And so I was looking at all these correspondences between the two. And if you do that, you will eventually run into Afrofuturism. And so there's a whole section toward the end after I go through all of like the kind of the different elements of hip hop and show how they relate to cyberpunk. I tie it into Afrofuturism. And Boogie Down Predictions kind of came out of that book because I've seen other people do this, but I remember looking at Jeff Chang, who's obviously a mentor of mine, and he's a buddy. He had done Can't Stop, Won't Stop, the great history of hip hop culture, but he also shortly thereafter released an edited collection about graffiti called Total Chaos. And I was like, that's so cool, because he invited all of his friends and, you know, a bunch of his colleagues to write about one aspect of this thing. So I was like, I know a bunch of people too. Let me ask around. And so I started asking around. This is why I was still writing Dead Precedents. I asked around if any of my scholarly and writerly friends had pieces about hip hop that they hadn't placed anywhere, or that they thought, you know, deserved a wider readership. And by the end of the first afternoon of just kind of like emailing different, you know, contacts, I had three really solid essays. And so I was like, oh, okay, this might have some traction. And actually only one of those essays ended up in the final book, but I knew that the idea was strong then. And as far as the themes, like the sections in the book are, you know, time, technology, and the future. And then that whole angle of time was just kind of emerged out of the essays that came in, because there wasn't like a call for papers or anything super academic like that. Again, it was just me talking to friends and them talking to friends, and it kind of came together just through my own network of contacts. It's also really cool because the aspect of time and how that connects to hip hop, because hip hop does a lot of like time shifting with samples and just rejuvenating these old memories. That wasn't something that I talked about a lot. I mean, I talked about nostalgia, and I talked about like the idea of implanted memories, using like Blade Runner as an example and samples in Dead Precedents. But just as an overall theme, it wasn't something that I explored that heavily. The time travel aspect, the science fictional kind of idea. And so to have that kind of emerge out of these essays was really interesting, because it makes the material cover a lot more ground than I'd expected.
Yeah, in terms of the structure, you write in the preface, and I quote here, you say, "I attempted to assemble a variety of voices, from poets to scholars, MCs to journalists. I tried bringing together a looser view than what you're used to. I tried to put together what Brian Cross will call a literary mixtape." Can you expand on, I guess, that choice instead of making like a call to papers and do the edited collection in a more traditional sense?
Yeah, this, I like to think of this as a strength, but in academia, it turned out to be not a strength. But I'm not interested in writing for, you know, journals and doing journal articles and like peer-reviewed scholarly work. And like that stuff has its place, and much respect to people who do that, but that's not what I want to do. I want people to read, you know, I'm writing for people to read, not writing to check a box on my CV or whatever. And so I knew when I was putting this together that it wasn't going to be a scholarly pursuit. It's a scholarly pursuit, but it wasn't going to be an academic pursuit. So I'm not going to get tenure because of this book or anything like that. And I didn't, that's not why I wanted to do it. I wanted it to be something that would be useful for scholars, but also interesting to just people who are interested in hip hop and Afrofuturism. So the, you know, the choice to reach out to MCs and poets and journalists rather than, and there are several very academic pieces in here and there are lots of academics involved. But that choice was just a matter of like what I like personally and, you know, just kind of where my work is. Like, it's not, it's, I like to say I'm a good scholar and a bad academic, because I, yeah, again, I write to be read and not to fulfill some, I don't know, career goal of getting tenure or whatever. Again, I'm not trying to sound down on that. That's great if people do that. I'm just not one of them.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You talk about the categories that the book is kind of split up into, being time, technology, and the future. Are you able to break down a little bit more about what you mean by these and why they were important distinctions when putting together the book?
At first, the subtitle, which is Hip Hop, Time, and Afrofuturism, the original title of the book was Hip Hop Theory, and then it was, the subtitle was Time, Technology, and the Future. And so I kind of just stole the old subtitle as the sections, but also those were kind of the themes that were, you know, again, that emerged after reading all of this material. And there were some that were more heavily, you know, about the future or Afrofuturism itself or time specific. And then there were a few that were just about like samples and just like technological practices within hip hop. And so they kind of pretty easily fell into these categories. I mean, they're kind of loose because there's some that could probably fit into more than one. But those, again, those are just kind of the buckets, if you will, that these pieces just kind of fell into as they came in. And there were, like I said before, there were some that didn't make it, and some that I added in at the very last minute. And, you know, this, I was talking earlier about the whole peer review process and how this book doesn't cut that. That was one of the things that happened during the publishing process, was it went from one publisher to another because an editor left. And at the second publisher, they sent it out for review and it got a bad review because it's not a scholar, it's not an academic piece of work. And I wasn't surprised by that, but I also thought that publisher realized that was going to be the case. So shout out to Strange Attractor for supporting this kind of work that's kind of in between, because they were, when I brought it to them, and I actually, when I brought it to them, I said, I know you guys aren't interested in this, but do you know where I, you know, who would be? Because I was kind of frustrated because it had already gone through two publishers for different reasons, and they were super excited about it. And so, yeah, they've been really, really great. But the categories, again, just kind of emerged out of reading through the pieces. I've done two collections of interviews in the past, and those also have loose categories that I tried to put them in. And again, it was not arbitrary, but it's like you just kind of, from reading the material, you just kind of find those themes that run through, and then that's the way I broke it down.
When I think about the subject, when I think about like hip hop and Afrofuturism, hip hop and sci-fi, hip hop and its relationship with time, I guess I immediately go to like the usual suspects: Deltron 3030, Dr. Octagon, Outkast, maybe on like an underground tip, artists like Masters of the Universe or like Last Emperor's comic book inspired Secret Wars. But what I think makes this exercise so profound is that once you start going through this kind of philosophical rabbit hole, you start to see like way more connections, like the DJ Screw piece, for example, and how he would like slow down a record to the point where it becomes almost indecipherable. But that's like a direct play on this idea of time. Womack had an interesting statement in the introduction where she claimed that hip hop's foundations were Afrofuturism. And I think that becomes more evident the more you read. Was that something that you kind of understood upon taking on this project? Or rather, was it something that you kind of learned as the articles began flowing in?
I mean, it didn't come directly from this. Again, I was in the middle of writing Dead Precedents. And within that book is where I'd made a lot of those connections already, because there were so many things that I had not anticipated being connected. And so I was already kind of steeped in those connections when I started putting this together. And it was just, it's a fascinating when you see those things start like connecting all over the place, because the usual suspects, my list of usual suspects is different from yours. I mean, definitely Deltron was one of the first things I thought of, but like Ram LZ, who's in, I've put him in three of my books now because I just think he's like the center of this kind of idea of the connection between hip hop and science fiction and Afrofuturism. He's like right in the middle of all that. So him and like African Mabata and the Soul Sonic Force. I mean, those early on, there was a lot of really just spaced out, weird, you know, otherworldly kind of stuff going on in hip hop. And so Itasha Womack's statement about, you know, hip hop being based on that is interesting, because the term Afrofuturism was, you know, has only been around since 1993, but the ideas of Afrofuturism have been out around since hip hop has started. So she's correct in that kind of timeline that, you know, with Sun Ra and Parliament Funkadelic and all of that stuff during the 70s, there was those, you can trace all the Afrofuturism in the music back to that. And then, you know, in literature, it goes back to Samuel Delaney and Octavia Butler. And so there's a rich history that is not really collected in the same way that other histories are. And that's, I mean, that's changing and has changed definitely in the scholarship over the last 20 years, but it's still, you can still get, when you go in there, you still are like, oh wow, I didn't realize all this stuff was, you know, kind of combined together under this umbrella.
You've talked about Dead Presidents a couple times here. Do you see that book, the previous book that you ended up writing, do you see that as a prerequisite for this in any sort of way? Like, do you feel like there's value in terms of reading that before you end up entering this edited collection?
I mean, I would love to just go, oh yes, of course, you must read
that first. Yeah.
But that book also requires a lot of, I mean, it's not like it's over people's head. I'm not trying to say it's like super smart, but like, I know like my dad has tried to read it, and my dad just doesn't know enough about any, he doesn't have the knowledge base for any of the stuff to see how those things connect. You know, he doesn't know who Tricky is, or who, like, he doesn't know anything about Public Enemy other than I like them a lot. So he doesn't see how they connect to, like, you know, Frankenstein and Mary Shelley and all this other science fiction stuff. So, I mean, if you already know, if any of this already sounds familiar to you, then I wouldn't say you'd have to read Dead Presidents first, but it's definitely more of a straight exploration of these connections, whereas Boogie Down Predictions is like, it's an edited collection, so it's not, you know, I had a friend who sat down to read it, you know, straight through, and it's, edited collections are not really arranged that way. They're more like you kind of pick out what you want to, you know, read at any given time. So if you wanted just more of a straight narrative that has an argument about what hip hop and Afrofuturism and cyberpunk and science fiction and how this all goes together, Dead Presidents is more that. But if you're already, you know, familiar with all of this stuff, I would say that Boogie Down Predictions will give you like a broader view.
One of the terms that's brought up. Yeah, 100%. One of the terms that's brought up here often in the text is this idea of like a post-apocalypse. When I think of that term, at least in association with like rap music and hip hop, the lyrics like Mobb Deep come to mind, right? Like there's a war going on outside. No man is safe from. You can run, but you can't hide forever in these streets that we done took, right? It's very visceral, vivid imagery, but it's painting that idea of a post-apocalypse. And prior, I certainly, like, if we talk about the usual suspects that I would have painted towards, like Deltron 3030, Dr. Octagon, these are very, as you say, like spaced out, weird, kind of far edge hip hop acts. Mobb Deep is not that to me, right? Like when I think of Mobb Deep, it's very far removed from this idea of science fiction. And I think one of the things that this book does particularly well is to kind of bridge those ideas together. But this idea of post-apocalypse, can you talk about how that kind of bridges into this idea of Afrofuturism and the, I guess, the connection between hip hop and Afrofuturism through this lens of the post-apocalyptic kind of landscape?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going to talk about Dead Presidents again. This is in Boogie Down Predictions as well, but in the beginning of Dead Presidents, that's one of the things I try to establish, is that hip hop came out of this post-apocalyptic scene in the South Bronx. It was even described that way at the time before hip hop happened. when Ronald Reagan was running for president, he went there and said that it looked like a bomb had gone off. And so there's like the roots, the very roots of hip hop are post-apocalyptic in a big sense. And I mean, other people, this is not my idea. Greg Tate said this, rest in peace. Kojo Ishan has talked about this as well. And so so much of science fiction is pointed toward this kind of dystopic, you know, post-apocalyptic scene. And then you have something like hip hop emerging out of that, using like all of these pieces of the past and the tools of the past and creating this whole new culture. So it's just rooted in it. It's just, obviously the South Bronx, it wasn't after an apocalypse, but it had the same kind of conditions that we think of in a science fictional post-apocalypse. And then, you know, you're talking about bridging that. That's another thing that, like, if you listen to Public Enemy or, you know, just the absolute noise and cacophony of their tracks, or even something like NWA, where it's just like alarms are going off. It sounds post-apocalyptic. And I know that it's like, it's also funky and it sounds great. And it's, you know, there are all these other aesthetics, but if you get in the mindset of the world is over and this is just like what's left of it, that is the soundtrack to that feeling. I mean, that's, you know, just the alarm, and the sound or the noise of it is just uncomfortable. It's like the world is over or the world is ending. You don't have to push it too far to like think of it in those terms or to see it in that way. I don't think anyway.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
I had a conversation with Angela Davis like a handful of months ago, and she and I asked her about the experiences of kind of, I don't know, what it felt like to live in the 70s and 80s and engaging in a lot of these kind of political discourses. And she had said that during that time, it felt different than today because they actually felt like a revolution was like on the precipice. It was a real possibility that revolution was going to happen. Not even just a real possibility, but they felt like it was going to happen. They felt like they were on the winning side of that war. I think when you look at the lyrics of Public Enemy, et cetera, I think that sort of that possibility or that potential or that optimism about revolution, I think was really just kind of in the air during those years.
Yeah. One of the things I point out in the preface to Boogie Down Predictions is the idea that science fiction used to look forward, like in the 20th century, science fiction looked forward and everything was this technological utopia and everything, all of our whims and needs were taken care of by machines and technology. And if you look at, you know, the last 20 years of science fiction, or 30 years probably, I haven't done the full timeline. Now they're like everything is dystopic, right? So there's no looking forward to the 22nd century and it being all taken care of. It's harder and harder to see farther out. So I think that optimism is, I mean, I'm still optimistic, but I think that optimism a lot of it is kind of dissipated in the meantime. Even since Public Enemy, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, Fight the Power was 1989, so. That's not even the, you know, 60s and 70s. That's not even, it's much later. Yeah, very strange to think of like the idea of optimism in that sense in the sense of revolution and the death of that optimism, right? It's weird.
How do you think the technique of sampling and the practice of sampling relates to the themes of this book? Because it comes up a fair amount. And I think on the face of it, if you were to press people about the idea of what sampling is, I don't think they would necessarily draw those correlations.
One of the reasons that it comes up so much in this book is that the theme of time and sampling kind of manipulates time, like just by using something that was recorded already and making it into something else, you're manipulating like the time of that recording and you're recontextualizing it in a different way. And it just goes around and around and over. And it's just fascinating because it just messes with your memories. This is what I was saying about the connecting that to Blade Runner, because in Blade Runner, the replicants, who are the advanced robots in that book and film, in order to like give them make them more controllable and give them like a cognitive cushion, they've got implanted memories, right? Because they didn't grow up, they were just formed. And so they have these memories of growing up that aren't theirs. And I just thought that was super fascinating to connect with listening to songs that are sampling, you know, songs you might have heard before or songs you might have heard your parents listening to before. It just messes with the idea of time and memory. And so that's a very like thin sketch of like how powerful sampling is and how much it messes with time. But that's the first thing I think of, is like just the idea of memories and repeating them. And, you know, just to me, that singularity of being able to make recordings out of other recordings, that's just huge. Cause it's like making recipe cake, right? It's just a very strange kind of thing. If you look further into the idea of like music and what music meant and how it used to be, like performing music and listening to music by yourself was weird because someone was, you know, everyone, it was a group kind of activity, and then it got recorded, and then it was like, that was such a huge schism about just the fact that music was recorded. It was supposed to be about performing it, and then it getting packaged and sold, and then listening to it on headphones rather than listening to it with other people. There's like all these things that just have to do with the fact that we are recording these things that are supposed to exist in time, you know, that comes and goes. So just being able to repeat them is one thing, but then using those to make other songs is like a whole other, we've made a whole other leap. So conceptually, like sampling is, and the way that it messes with time is, I mean, we haven't even, this book, I don't even, it doesn't, there's so much to it. It comes up a lot in the book, but I think there's a lot more to be said about that idea.
Yeah, one of the most kind of fascinating ideas that I kept kind of lingering on is, yeah, when it comes to sampling, at least I would traditionally think of it, if I'm trying to draw the correlations with time, I'm thinking, yeah, you're sampling older records and you're bringing them into the present. But that's not the end of it, because you have an act like the Bomb Squad, who produced for Public Enemy, and they're using this technique, and they're bringing records from the past, but they're not stopping at the present, right? They're trying to make futuristic sounding records. And the idea of sampling as the opportunity to take a record from, yeah, the past, but bring it to the future, I think is an idea that is tremendously powerful. But you see it time and time again, especially with these more kind of boundary pushing artists.
Right. There's like that idea of creating an alternate future, or creating an alternate, and not even a future, but just like an alternate timeline by using two or three different samples from the past and reanimating them into something else. There's just, again, there's so much going on there.
I kind of lingered on this a little bit before, but outside of the more kind of far out examples, I think a lot of the connections to these themes that artists make are undoubtedly unintentional. I think a lot of artists, especially the more kind of street oriented rappers, would be reluctant to identify with the world of science fiction, for instance. And I think a lot of what this book does rather beautifully, at least for me, was it bridges that divide. It makes me think of like a Mobb Deep in a similar way as a Deltron 3030. It makes me think of Wu-Tang Clan as something not too far off from like a Saul Williams or Shabazz Palaces. And these are mental divides and borders that I've always drawn in the art form. I've always just considered these in two different planes of the art form. And I think this book begins to blur those boundaries. Do you see the book as an attempt to bridge those divisions in any way?
Oh, yes. And I'm glad that came through, because I mean, I've definitely thought of things that way for a long time, very divided. You know, like you said, Deltron and Dr. Octagon would be in one camp, and then Mobb Deep, NWA, that kind of thing would be in a different camp. And if you use that lens of Afrofuturism or like the science fiction post-apocalyptic kind of lens, then you can see Mobb Deep or Public Enemy or, you know, something that you wouldn't have put in that category. You can see them that way. And again, you're right. They like Wu-Tang Clan would not connect themselves with science fiction. I mean, RZA might, but anyway, that wouldn't be the first thing that they would think of, would be, you know, to be associated with science fiction. But yeah, that the idea of trying to recast things like that, that would have been dismissed as something in a different category, and recasting it in this light was definitely like part of what I wanted to do with this book. And Dead Precedents as well. Like they're definitely companion pieces, and in that, you know, I'm responsible for both of them. I mean, this one, in this book, of course, I only wrote the preface. So I only wrote like a fraction of what's in the book. But yeah, the idea of bringing all that together and trying to take the way that I have seen these connections and maybe put them in a way that someone else can see those is definitely like one of the points of putting this together, for sure.
Just kind of in general, what do you hope that people end up getting out of this text? And now that it's been out for a little bit of time, do you feel that the response has succeeded on that?
Yeah, I mean, trying to break down the culture into, you know, again, just get people to see things in new ways. And a lot of, I mean, you know, these ideas, even bringing them together in here, they're not my ideas. These are ideas that other people have discussed and other people have talked about, and I've written in other books, and, you know, and then of course this book was written by other people. I've just put it all together. But yeah, I've had several people say that it made them think about the music that they already liked a lot differently, and introduced them to some people that they hadn't heard before. And then even just the comments you've made so far, yes, I feel like that it is achieving kind of what I, you know, set out to do. Yeah, it's been great. It hasn't even been out a year yet, but it's the response has been really, really good.
Yeah, that's another big one. Just introducing people to new art. I feel like any book that deals with, well, any book that deals with art is bound to do that to some degree. But the people that you've chose to contribute to this thing are clearly knowledgeable about the art form, right? Like, even just from the introduction, you start getting people like Shabazz Palaces and Saul Williams and all these cat Moore Mother, these like underground cats that I would listen to, but I wouldn't expect to pick up a general audience book, or certainly like an academic book, and see those sort of names being brought up. I think the exploration factor is certainly there as well.
That's good. That's good to hear. one of the reviews of the book said that it was, that they kind of mentioned that the usual suspects were involved, and I was like, really? I tried to reach out outside of that. I mean, they're definitely in there. Like, we've mentioned Public Enemy and Wu-Tang Clan, and I said, you know, Ram LZ. I like to think that there are some other ones that people wouldn't have considered.
There's a whole section or article on Gabriel Teodros from Seattle, and that's an incredible nod. I almost never see anyone mention that kind of neck of the woods and that sphere of hip hop, but that stuff's incredible. If you start going through kind of back catalog, and I think a lot of people that take this stuff seriously, or at least people that are just really fascinated in the art form that are looking for new avenues to explore, I can't imagine that you'll read an entire book like this and not find new avenues to go down.
Right. I certainly hope so.
So I wanted to ask things, before we end up kind of wrapping things up, just kind of generally speaking, what are you currently working on? You mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, your next book is kind of hovering around this idea of skateboard culture.
It's a media theory book, but there's a whole chapter on skateboarding and kind of how skateboarding reinterprets the built environment and kind of this idea of mining affordances. And so it's I've been calling it like a post-punk media theory book because there's a lot of music in it as well, but it's mostly like Fugazi and Gang of Four and Radiohead and stuff like that. Laurie Anderson, Brian Eno. There's a lot of different music, but it's basically trying to make this argument about how we use media, how we are mediating our world with our technology. And I know that that's a well-worn topic. And so I was trying to make it weird by bringing in, again, examples of things that I don't think I haven't seen anyone talk about in any other book or any other fashion. And so, yeah, skateboarding is a big kind of part of that. And so there's a lot of DIY and punk rock and post-punk kind of culture that I'm using to make my arguments about media theory. It's called The Medium Picture.
Gotcha. When do you hope that this one will be out?
I don't know. This is another one that's been, I'm having publisher issues. It's been with the publisher and then not with the publisher and then with the publisher. And so right now it doesn't have a home. So I'm still waiting to see. And I finished the manuscript kind of at the end of last year. And then in the meantime, I've just been kind of tweaking it. I was waiting to get the foreword. There's a lot of Marshall McLuhan in this book because he's kind of like the guru of media theory. And his grandson, Andrew McLuhan, wrote the foreword for me. And so for a while, I was waiting to get that from him. And so I was just kind of tweaking it and adding things here and there. And so as it's been, it was with the publisher at the time. And so once it got passed over again, I've just been working on it here and there in the meantime. I also have a new collection of short stories coming out in September. I just got the galleys for that yesterday. So that's the other thing that'll be coming out soon.
Awesome. Man, I can't wait for any kind of future project that you end up tackling. The first project that I had got from you was Dead Presidents, and I was thoroughly enjoying everything that I read from that. But this project, the Boogie Down Predictions, probably more so. The ideas and just kind of the intellectual exercise of going through a lot of this stuff and rethinking about how I thought about other acts that I was already familiar with was really, really powerful exercise. I'm genuinely looking forward to future projects that you end up putting out.
Awesome. One last note about Boogie Down Predictions. It has,
yeah, sure.
We were talking about it, not it being scholarly, but not academic. It has essays from DJs and from MCs. Lab Tech One wrote one. Ju Salim from the UK wrote one. DJ Food Stamp wrote one. Kevin Koval, who's a poet, has a whole section of poems. And so the content is also quite varied. So there are academic articles in there, but there's also lots of other kinds of content in there.
The food stamp connection is really awesome too. I used to get the DJ food stamp mixes that he would put through undergroundhiphop.com. You would be able to get a free, if you ordered like $50 or $100 from undergroundhiphop.com, you could get a free item, and those food stamp mixes were always included in those free piles. So
I
wound up with a bunch of them over the years.
Yeah. His piece is really good. It's a kind of a just deep exploration of how DJs become cyborgs by using their turntable technology. That piece is actually up on the MIT Reader website. There's a link to it from my website. So if anybody wants to read an excerpt, that's up there.
Amazing. Man, thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day to have this conversation with me. I genuinely enjoyed it.
Awesome.